The Reclaiming America for Christ radio network is on the air. Stay tuned for today's Heartland Nation with Pastor Bruce DeLay.
It's 11:59 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Sing a song about the heartland, the only place I feel at home. Sing about the way a good man works until the daylight's gone.
Well, good evening, Boston. Welcome to the Heartland Nation program. My name is Bruce DeLay. I am your host on Tuesday evenings here on WROL. I am so pleased to be a part of the Reclaiming America for Christ effort. That is, I'm associated and I work, you might say, arm in arm and elbow to elbow with Paul Blair and Dan Zimmerle and so many of these guys that are involved trying to just simply take America back for Christ. Somebody has methodically, inch by inch, over time, you know, taken ground, and darkness has prevailed in many parts of our country and many lives of our people in America. And now it's time, past time, overdue, to take back America for Christ. So here we are doing that very thing on Heartland Nation. Now, tonight, I just want to go over some highlights. I want to talk about a variety of issues, some of the main topics, you know. One of my big topics, for example, and this is not for tonight, but I always talk about our southern border. I spend time down on our southern border in Cochise County, Arizona, which borders Sonora, Mexico, to the south. And I talk about that issue quite a bit. I even have a motto that we are building a border fence around your brain, one concrete reinforced idea at a time. I mean, there is a plethora. There is a long laundry list of issues that we could talk about tonight. We're going to talk about the presidential race. We're going to talk about Islam. We're going to talk about same-sex so-called marriage and homosexuality. We'll talk about, if we have time, progressivism. And we'll talk about Baltimore, the war on cops, you know, all across America, balanced with the problem of here and there police brutality. Is it real? Well, of course there's reality to some of it. But now we have people hunting cops, killing them in cold blood, feeling justified because one time somebody did something wrong in uniform to one of their relatives or somebody they used to know. I don't know. It's insane. It's not America as we've known it. And I hate to say, and I am sad to report, that actually the America that we've known has already slipped away. And some of us are just waking up to the reality of that fact. Well, before we start, let me wish all the moms a happy Mother's Day. I know we just came off of Mother's Day weekend. I preached on Deborah, you know, from the book of Judges last Sunday. It says that Deborah arose a mother in Israel. We need some Deborahs to rise up as mothers in Israel. The word mother means a mother as the bond of the family. And we need mothers not only to be the bond of their family, but now mothers in Israel, that is, mothers that go beyond their family, they're good at home, you know, they are all set and things are flowing good there, then they become mothers who actually rise up in the community, like Deborah did, and they begin to help their nation go the right way and hold their nation together when maybe otherwise it would fly apart. So anyway, happy Mom's Day. We had all of our children in this weekend. We have three older girls that are married with kids and so forth. And then we had our son who's in college. He was home. And then, of course, our daughter, our last daughter, number five, she's at home still in high school. And so it was a great Mother's Day for my wife, Cindy. And I hope it was a good Mother's Day for you at your house as well. Mainly, didn't really matter what we gave, what gifts, you know, were unwrapped and so forth. Really, it's the love and the fact that you spend time. The fact is, time is the most precious gift we can give each other whether it's at Christmas time, birthdays, Mother's Day, whatever it might be, is instead of giving your wife something expensive from the jewelry store, but not your time, between those two things, I think she'd rather have your time. You know, jewelry's nice as icing on the cake, but let's face it, time is what it requires for a true relationship. So tonight, let's begin by going down through these issues and just touching to help Boston get a Christian worldview, you know, a perspective. I won't call it a worldview. I'll just say a Christian perspective on some of the most important issues, frontline issues of the day, and we'll do that. But first, I've got two stories that I really must share because you probably aren't going to hear these stories anywhere else. This out of Wisconsin, but it affects every single one of us. You know, I'm broadcasting from Oklahoma. I couldn't be in a much different place than the Boston Metro here in Oklahoma. Very different in so many ways. And Boston and Wisconsin is different. Oklahoma and Wisconsin are different. And yet this story affects all of us, and it gives you, you might say, your finger on the pulse of what's really going on in our country up to the highest levels. When you read something like this, General Electric, GE, is moving from Wisconsin. General Electric is planning to move its 115-year-old X-ray division from Wisconsin, to Beijing, China. Now get the impact of this. In addition to moving the headquarters, the company will invest $2 billion in China and train more than 65 engineers and create 6 different research centers across China. This is the same GE, the same General Electric that made $5.1 billion in the United States last year, yet paid no taxes. Yeah, the same company that employs more people overseas than it does in the United States. Now, what is going on? We have companies that are favored in this economy, companies favored by the federal government. Crony capitalism is what they call it. Then they try to say that all capitalism is crony capitalism, which it is not. They try to demonize real free market capitalism and so forth with this crony capitalism, and they actually demonize others when they themselves are doing it. Hillary Clinton, you know, talks about the rich. She is the rich. It is so bizarre, and people swallow this stuff so quickly and easily that they keep on dishing it out. So let's get this straight. GE Chairman Jeff Immelt heads the Commission on Job Creation for President Obama. He's the job czar, Jeffrey Immelt, and he's supposed to help create jobs, but I guess he forgot to say which country that he was supposed to create jobs for, because now GE moving from Wisconsin to Beijing. I think people need to know about this. I think that people ought to know, maybe consider whether they should buy General Electric products. Let the Chinese people buy GE products. Maybe you and I ought to really pay attention a lot more and say, you know what, Jeffrey Immelt, you know what, Obama administration, if you are telling us, you know, on camera and your speeches all around the globe or, you know, all around America as you go to these, you know, town halls, so-called, where they don't ever ask any questions and all this, and you're telling us you're doing so much for the economy, we're on an upturn. Things are looking good, and yet the reality is GE is going to China. GE is investing $2 billion in China and training more than 65. They're not training 65 American engineers. They're not creating 6 new research centers in the United States of America. No, that's in China. But they are taking their $5.1 billion that they made last year in the United States, on which they paid 0 taxes. This is how you create winners and losers. The government, when the government is involved with these public-private partnerships and all this kind of nonsense where Some companies get wealthy and other companies go out of business. The government calls the balls and strikes and is the entity that makes or breaks companies based on political loyalty and campaign contributions and so forth. The corruption here is so phenomenal. It's so hard to get our minds around that it works in the favor of the corrupt individuals. That's what's going on in Wisconsin that affects both the Boston area as well as the Heartland. Now, let me flip over to one more story before we go through our litany of top issues and just give little nuggets on each one tonight. Kind of, I guess, a cliff notes, you know? I guess just a little thing that might help you to know what's a Christian position on some of these big issues that we face today. Before we do that, I just want to mention one other story, and that's from Breitbart News. It's called Al-Qaeda's Base at MIT. What? Well, then we know Al-Qaeda has a base in Yemen. We know, you know, they have bases in Libya now that we helped them create by killing off Gaddafi. And all we know Al-Qaeda has bases throughout the world. What do you mean, Bruce? Why is Breitbart putting out a story called Al-Qaeda's Base at MIT? Well, let me just read to you the information. At the end of April, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology unveiled a permanent memorial to MIT police officer Sean Collier. You may recall that Officer Collier was gunned down by the Boston Marathon bombers 3 days after they blew up at the marathon, you know, all the people and deaths and destruction and injuries and so forth were the result. It is painful now to learn that in the late 1990s, that would be right before 9/11/01, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the field in Pennsylvania, right? It's painful to learn that in the late 1990s, there were students at MIT who helped to recruit for the Chechen Jihad, and they raised funds for Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups operating in the Tsarnaev's homeland. It is even more painful that the man who led this fundraising effort was still on MIT's staff when Officer Collier was gunned down 3 days after the Boston bombing. Wait a second. You're telling me that a guy was on the payroll at MIT who led the fundraising effort for Al-Qaeda in the Tsarnaev brothers' homeland, and that he only now, most recently, is off the payroll? Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. Mr. Laher had been MIT's Muslim chaplain for almost 20 years. Do you know, I've been standing on rooftops, I've been shouting it. We must go into these mosques. We must treat the Muslim chaplains even and so forth as potential problems. We have to listen to what they're saying. We have to listen in Arabic or whatever language that they're talking in and teaching in. Yeah. He was the Muslim chaplain at MIT for almost 20 years. Today he continues to preach at the Islamic Society of Boston. Now, he's the guy who was raising funds for Al-Qaeda in the Tsarnaev brothers' homeland, and still he resides and is free to spread his vitriol, his hate speech, or whatever you want to call it, his anti-American, pro-Islam rhetoric at the Islamic Society of Boston, the extremist mosque, which was founded by MIT students near the campus. This is where the Tsarnaevs worshipped, quote-unquote worshipped. I wouldn't call it worship. It's demon worship. It's idolatry to a false god during their radicalization. Breitbart goes on. Americans for Peace and Tolerance have just released a mini-documentary called Al-Qaeda's Base at MIT, showing how MIT Muslim chaplain Lahir used his leadership of the MIT Muslim Students Association as a vehicle for raising money for Al-Qaeda and their causes around the world. We especially focus on Al-Qaeda affiliate in Chechnya, which he and his associates lionized, promoted, glorified, so that people could get money and send there, even as MIT trusted him to be its Muslim students' spiritual guide. Do you think it's a good spiritual guide to encourage people to fund Islamic terrorism, especially when it boomerangs and comes back from Chechnya? It didn't just stay in Chechnya. The whole ideology of Islam is to take over the entire planet. So, of course, he knew. Maybe, the naive people here don't know, and they don't pay attention to listen to what is being preached, but he knew that it would boomerang. It would end up coming back over here. Laher came to MIT as a student in 1990, and by 1998, he became the MIT Muslim chaplain. And by the year 2000, he also became president of a Muslim charity based in Boston called Care International, which was founded by Osama bin Laden's mentor, Abdallah Azzam, or Azzam, however you want to emphasize the Z's, and was originally called Al-Kitfa Refugee Center. They like to throw around these words like refugee and so forth. Just sounds so liberal, doesn't it? To help out people. CARE International was, in essence, a fundraising vehicle for Mujahideen, that is, the soldiers of Islam. After the leader of Al-Kitfa was in Brooklyn, the blind sheikh, Omar Abdul Rahman, was convicted for his role in the first World Trade Center bombing in 93. Boston CARE International took over as Al-Qaeda's main base in the United States. Did you know that? Right there in Boston. He was quite an important figure in Al-Qaeda's leadership there. His perch at MIT meant that he had easy access to the best American Muslim minds and their world-class technical skills. Yeah. As well as all their money and their well-to-do families and so forth. As a religious scholar and an engineer, Laher was both the spiritual and technological leader of CARE International. He pioneered the jihadi use of the new internet medium to fundraise and recruit for Al-Qaeda causes online, all the while being on the payroll at MIT. Still speaking in Boston at the Boston Islamic Center to this day. Wow. Do you even know that? Is this being investigated? Is this being reported by anyone else but Breitbart? I don't know. Have you heard of it? This is something that he put on his personal website, this MIT Muslim chaplain. Do they even allow Christian chaplains at MIT? I don't know what they do at MIT. But prominently featured on his personal website was a notorious call to jihad, a tract called Join the Caravan, quote unquote. It said, "Beloved brother, draw your sword, climb onto the back of your horse, and wipe the blemish off your ummah. If you do not take the responsibility, then who will?" Unquote. This is part of the same tract that was found on Tsarnaev's computer. Laher's website contained a large collection of his writings and of sermons that he gave in the Boston area. These sermons are replete with full-on calls for jihad, such as this passage. "When the Muslim lands are being attacked and the Muslims are being raped and killed, the only solution prescribed by Allah is jihad. Jihad is for all times." Oh, wait a second. I thought he said jihad is just for when we're being persecuted so badly. No, he says jihad is for all times. Jihad does not stop. "Those of us who have not yet managed to go and physically help our brothers and sisters should support our Mujahideen brethren with prayer, with money, with clothes, by taking care of their families, and at some point in person." Wow. "Otherwise, we will face the wrath of Allah." Now, one of the students at MIT who answered this Muslim cleric, this wonderful Muslim leader's call to join jihad in person, was a bright young biologist named Aifa Siddiqui. She started out as a passionate and prolific fundraiser for CARE International, but by the time she was arrested by the FBI in Afghanistan in 2008, she was known as simply Lady Al-Qaeda and had become the most wanted woman in the world. She's now serving an 86-year prison sentence for attempting to kill FBI agents who were trying to arrest her. Her belongings, listen to this, her belongings upon arrest included 2 pounds of cyanide and plans for mass casualty attacks in New York using chemical and biological weapons, as well as literature about the Ebola virus. Yeah. This Muslim, wonderful Muslim spiritual leader, Leher at MIT, just a wonderful spiritual leader there, right? His sermons preached at the general Islamic obligation to go to jihad are on CARE International's website, along with its newsletter, Al-Husam, which means the sword, promoted that he and his fellow CARE leaders were seeing as the concrete performance of that responsibility. That is, everybody has to. This is a concrete responsibility. You must take up the sword. Now, all the while he's doing this, he's on the payroll, okay, as a Muslim chaplain at MIT. In the late 1990s, CARE International focused its fundraising activity on the Russian breakaway Republic of Chechnya. Specifically, CARE International backed the Al-Qaeda affiliated terrorists under the leadership of Chechen warlord Shamil Basayev. Well, you know, this stuff just keeps on getting more and more, you know, disgusting. Our leadership, our people, our college campuses, our universities are in bed with these people. They have taken so much money from Islamists for their Islamic law centers, which is nothing more than a stronghold for Sharia within the United States. They colonize, they move a lot of quote-unquote immigrants in. Then they colonize, get involved in economic, political, every kind of effort you can think of. Then they give big money to the universities for these law centers. Guess what? Because they anticipate and expect to implement Sharia right here in the U.S. of A. And I guess the U.S. Constitution be damned? Is that what they... Yeah, that's exactly what they're after. It sounds far-fetched. I know it does. But it's nonetheless the absolute truth. I take a little more time on this story than I intended to, but I think it is mind-blowing to know that Al-Qaeda has a base at MIT. And they only after, you know, they now have a statue to commemorate the university police officer that was killed by the Tsarnaev brothers, but how do you put up a statue but still keep a guy on the payroll who orchestrated the whole thing? I mean, he orchestrated the financing. He orchestrated calling for jihad and sending people over there. And how does he get by with that? And still to this day, not now on the payroll at MIT, that's a little too, you know, that's a little too public. That information is going to get out there like it is on this program. But no, he's still speaking at the Boston Islamic Center. This has got to stop. America has to identify our enemy. And it's not just a few nuts who are misusing the Islamic religion. It is Islam at its core. And Islam, of course, not everybody in Islam even understands that. They're on a treadmill. They're on a program by which they are fed little by little by little. And probably many of us who understand Islam have more direct information about Islam than they're allowed to have within Islam in the early stages. So when you say, you know, there are moderate Muslims, I would say, well, you know, some of them are uninformed. They just don't know yet how dangerous Islam is. They'll find out once they get their hooks into them and time goes by and family members are created, friendships are created, loyalties are solidified, then they begin to break the more controversial things to folks about their religion. They may be in that category, or they may simply be moderate in the sense that they're not completely involved in jihad yet. Maybe just only the cultural jihad, maybe just the colonization phase. But if they have to, and when the time comes for violent jihad, they will either assist or they will actually join in with the violent jihad, those moderate, quote-unquote moderate Muslims. So how a Christian must get informed on this issue. A Christian must understand what Islam is, what it teaches. And even when some Islamic people or Muslim people who don't even know very much about their own religion deny that, the fact is they simply don't know, or they're committing taqiyya, which is lying for the sake of Islam, the greater good of the furtherance of Islam. And so whether they're lying or they just don't know, it doesn't mean that they're right. It means that what you've learned right here on the Heartland Nation program is the accurate information about Islam. Christians need to wake up and stop this nonsense that I always look for the good in people. Guess what? There is no good in anybody. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The Bible says that there's none righteous, no, not one. The only good that is in people is Christ when he resides in us. That's the only good you see in people. So don't go around with this false, humanistic thing going around saying, well, I think there are good people. Look, none of us are good. It's only Christ that is good. Now, having said that, understand what Islam is and don't get blinded by these, religiously humanistic concepts that aren't even biblical. All right, well, let's move on just a little bit. Now we've let a little time go by, and I want to make sure and talk about some of the top issues of the day. The presidential race. Oh, boy. They're all coming out now and saying all sorts of things. I promise, two cars in every garage, a chicken in every pot. And it's honest. If it weren't so sickening, it would be comical. And I don't really know which is more comical, the fact that they say all kind of outlandish things that they never intend to follow up on and actually put any action to. They just say whatever the audience they're looking at that day wants to hear. Whether that's more comical or the fact that we keep listening to it. And people get all excited during a presidential, race. Did you hear what so-and-so said in their speech last night? I'm voting for them, man. If you only could have heard what they said. Listen, politicians will say anything. You have to marry what they say with what they do. That's why we have, the ability to go back and check their voting records if they've been in Congress and so forth. You have to go back and be able to check what they did as a governor, what their agenda truly was, what their passions are by what fruit they've borne. As Jesus said, you'll know them by their fruit, not by their words. Now, when will Americans, figure that out? I'm not sure. Jeb Bush comes out and says, he's a Christian and we need more Christian liberty, all this. And everybody's happy. They're all wanting to get on the Jeb Bush bandwagon. Well, I'm sorry, but he has no track record of doing things that would show you that he actually sees, understands the plight of Christians, the loss of Christian liberty in America, and he's going to do something to change that. Just because he makes a speech and says that in front of Liberty University, we're all supposed to say, oh, wow, well, whew, I'm really glad he cleared that up. Hillary Clinton, she'll say anything to anybody to make sure she gets their vote. And sadly, it's just that easy to get a lot of people's vote is what you tell them today. I would have to say to you, just in a mountaintop, touching on the high points here, of the presidential race. If either Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush get into office in 2016, our country is basically doomed. I mean, it will only be worse in the future. God cannot bless America when we stay in the same position on things like abortion, on things like an open border, which is ungodly, by the way. Read the Bible, read the Old and New Testaments. There are ways of doing things. And the very fact that we have people sitting in churches believing that they are going to heaven when they've never accepted Christ, when they're not born again, they just have just been allowed to come in and sort of, you know, by osmosis, be one of us or whatever. But there's never been a commitment to Christ, never confessing his name before men. Any of the things, you know, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Nothing like that has ever taken place, and yet somehow everybody's a Christian just because they say so. It doesn't matter what the Bible says, what God's ways are. We just let it. Well, it's the same thing about our country. We now just let anybody in. It's called illegal immigration, illegal aliens. We call them, oh, well, they are just undocumented workers, or there's something, but they're certainly not Americans. They're not in the melting pot. They want to retain all of their... They want to leave Mexico or somewhere and all of its problems, yet they want to maintain Mexico inside the United States. That's not our ways. That's not how America began. That's not the great melting pot that America has always been. And so what's happening is cultural diversity and multiculturalism is destroying what we once knew as America. Same in the church. It's not a Christian church if Christ and his word and his ways are not being proclaimed and upheld. Do I have to really explain it? So if we have people like Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, if one of these people wins the White House again, we're just not going to be able to sustain the amount of evil on the Hillary side and the amount of incompetency and progressivism on Jeb Bush's side. No, we need a Ted Cruz. We need possibly a Rick Perry, someone along these lines, someone on that end of the spectrum. I just don't think some people understand how serious here in the heartland of America we really see the condition of our nation. And we're trying to impart that. We're trying to communicate that to you in the Boston area. It is red alert, man. It is all hands on deck. Rick Perry, and I told this, maybe a year ago on my morning program on WROL. Rick Perry unceremoniously, quietly, without much fanfare or media attention at all. Matter of fact, the media was banned. He went, about a year ago, he went to the home church of the historical figure, Sam Houston. Now, if you know anything about Texas, which we lived there for 12 years, homeschooled about four or five of our, I guess maybe all five of our children for a period of time in Texas. Sam Houston he's like the George Washington of America to Texas. He's Texas's George Washington, Sam Houston. Sam Houston had a church where he worshiped. It was a place where he was baptized. Rick Perry, governor of Texas, now former governor, went there, had his family. They had a special family-only service in the chapel there, this old historic chapel where Sam Houston used to go. They went outside to the river, outside the church building, and he was baptized in the same river that Sam Houston was baptized in. And then unceremoniously, you know, went back to work. Now, why is that significant? Well, obviously, it meant something to Rick Perry. Well, why? What was so important about doing that and reestablishing his Christian faith, especially connecting it to the historic life of Sam Houston? Well, if you come in from the north on the interstate there in Houston, the city of Houston, fourth largest city in America, there's a huge statue. I mean, I'm talking about Lincoln Memorial size depiction of Sam Houston. This is what Texans see as important in making a statement today. They stand with Sam Houston. What does that mean? That means, let me cut to the chase. If Sam Houston was alive today, if Sam Houston would be spinning in his grave, you know, if he could spin in his grave. But if he was alive today, he would literally be on the attack against what's going on in our country, trying to win America back. That's the nature and the spirit by which Rick Perry is going to attack this presidential campaign. And God only knows if he'll follow through, if he were to be elected, if he would make some changes. I think he probably would. Don't know. He has some track record in his past of doing very great things. He has some that are very questionable things. So it's always a gamble with these politicians. But I'm just saying, we need somebody, a Ted Cruz, somebody on the far, you know, most conservative, most Constitution-honoring, God-honoring, Bible-honoring type of candidate to turn this country around. Anything short of that will be a complete disaster. We know about Clinton Cash. We know about the email dump. I mean, now we know, you know, maybe Hillary dumped her emails more to get rid of information on her dealings regarding the Clinton Cash scandal and all the favors being done by her as Secretary of State and for the big money payoffs for Bill Clinton, her husband, you know, speaking around the world. Now we're thinking, well, I thought it was about Benghazi. Well, maybe some of it was, but now maybe most of her emails that she dumped had to do with Clinton Cash. That's the way it's looking anyway. I mean, if you love America, okay, I'm just beseeching you. Don't vote for Hillary Clinton just because, after all, we need to have had a woman president. Well, there's a lot of other women who'd make better choice than her. Don't vote for Jeb Bush just because he's a good old boy connected in with the Republican establishment. That's the last thing we need. We need somebody who could literally jerk the slack out of the sail of this country and turn us on a completely different course than we've been on for the last 15, 20 years. Well, there's lots of other things to talk about today. Progressivism, globalism, the Constitution, the rule of law. Or should we go by case law? Should we every time, you'll watch the liberal progressives, when they get into discussion about something that's illegal, they'll go to case law and the conservatives will go to the Constitution. I mean, it's like clockwork. It's just what they do. Because they know that the law has been progressively altered and changed and manipulated, and the opinions of judges have become law through case law. And if we go back to the Constitution and refer to that as our law, then that's going to mess up all the effort, all the ground they've gained with all the case law now that they have continued to be. It's like building a house of cards, but one day, you know, a little bit of wind will blow one card and the entire thing will fall down. That's what the progressives have built. And you know why? Because at that point they want chaos so that they, out of that chaos, they can say, here's our plan. Well, it's a global governance. Yeah, let's ditch the U.S. Constitution. Let's embrace things like the U.N. Charter, which is so completely different than the U.S. Constitution, which says our rights are God-given. Therefore, man can't take them away. The U.N. Charter says that our rights are man-given. Therefore, man giveth. Man can take away and will take away. So the real question here is, what kind of America do you want? And I think a lot of the people who have been voting for the wrong America didn't really understand that. It's what they've been told in school and the same concepts. Now, as they come into their adulthood, they just, you know, vote that way, not understanding that it is literally destroying our country a little bit at a time. And so over our adult lives, we have seen things go down the drain, and we're wondering why. Well, it's because if we keep doing what we're doing now, if you keep on voting people in, like a Hillary Clinton or a Jeb Bush or whatever, they're going to continue to, from the very top, erode our nation from the inside out and make allies of our enemies and alienate our allies with their behavior. It's bizarre. To weaken us so that our enemies without have an easier time of taking over, and weaken us from within, so that we don't have the power from within, we don't have the resolution and the stamina and so forth inside to withstand a takeover by a progressive communist style global agenda. So here we are. Do we still have an ability? Yeah, we still do. We still have something to say. We still have things we can do, and we intend to do that. Now, one of the things we're watching now is a communist technique. It's been done, you know, in history. It's not hard to read this. It's not hard to see it and then look back in history and see where it has manifested in the past and understand who's behind it. The whole Baltimore thing, the war on law enforcement, the bringing down of any kind of institutionalized authority is a communist, you know, agenda. Out of the ashes of what they intend to destroy, they intend to, you know, have the phoenix of communism, basically. Progressivism, communism, globalism, all these things working together. They intend for that phoenix to arise from the ashes after they have destroyed America from within. And they're well on their way. Now, they've blown these things up into much bigger issues with the complicit, you know, work of the media. They've made it all look like Ferguson was huger than it really was. Baltimore was terrible. But, folks, it's not as big as they're making it out to be either. Then they try to export it into other cities and get other people burning stuff and other people rioting, and people are just dumb enough to go along with it. When the fact is, Mike Brown was a criminal. He didn't have his hands up. He was attacking the officer. The officer did not, you know, gun him down in broad daylight, as they just keep on saying. And people just believe it. They're not allowed to hear the other side of the story. And so I guess I can understand. I'd be enraged and upset, too, if I didn't know all the facts and believed that I did. But now we have a war on cops. All across America, if you're a cop, and apparently not if you're just a white cop, anyone dressed in blue, so to speak, is fair game. And so young black men are feeling, you know, no compunction. They're feeling like, hey, I really, it's a good thing. It's striking back at the bad guys if I murder, you know, a police officer. Because after all, they're the problem. They're hurting my brothers someplace. No, that's all an agenda being pumped into the minds and hearts of so many people. And it's working. Quite sadly, it is working. Mississippi, two officers gunned down. New York City, a young 25-year-old officer gunned down, shot in the face by a man who apparently believed, well, he was a white cop, and after all, they got to die. The pigs got to die, right? That's what's being pumped into their brains. And instead of respect for law enforcement, they're being taught that they're fair game and that they must die. Now, folks, think about this. Think about the chaos that will ensue if we don't get a handle on this, if we don't put a stop to this. If Loretta Lynch is the same as Eric Holder, we're in big trouble. And there's nothing to indicate that she's anything different than Eric Holder in a pantsuit. That's what it's looking like so far. Why do I say that? Well, let's see. She sent from the Department of Justice three people to Freddie Gray's funeral from the Department of Justice administratively. How many did she send to the New York City police officer's funeral? Zero. We have the same pattern that Eric Holder did in Ferguson. We have the same pattern that he's been doing ever since he came into office, where they support the criminal, but they don't support law enforcement. And when the very top cop of the land, in this case, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, or Loretta Lynch now, as she has taken Holder's place, when the very top cop does not stand behind his troops, his police officers, and I'm not talking don't weed out the problems and don't stop the police brutality and don't take the bad apple out of the barrel before it infects the whole barrel of apples. I'm not talking about that. Of course that should be done. But I'm talking about when by your actions you imply that you believe there's systemic rampant racism and brutality going on throughout every law enforcement agency in America. Of course that's true when there's absolutely zero information to support that. You are then having an agenda. There's some other agenda going on, which is to weaken that law enforcement, to weaken authority in America, to weaken just structure, you know, and civilization in America, and turn it over to the criminal element for further destruction from the inside out. Of course, there is police brutality that must be investigated and dealt very strongly with. But folks, you know, we had a story here in Oklahoma this weekend. Two police officers were called to a burglary in Oklahoma City. They responded. Out of the house that was being burglarized, somebody ran. There was a foot pursuit. In the foot pursuit, the officers got separated. One came upon the burglary suspect, and a fight ensued. They tried to arrest him, and he overpowered the one officer by himself and took away his baton and had struck him over the head as many as 12 times with his own baton on the driveway of this other house. And it was a citizen armed with a gun that stepped up and pointed the gun and commanded him to stop hitting the officer. It was only then that he stopped hitting him over the head with his own baton. And, of course, the officer was taken in critical condition to the local OU Medical Center. But the fact is, police are always in danger of their lives. You know, their lives are on the line every time they go out into the community in uniform. People think that they're out there brutalizing and, you know, so forth. Well, there might be a few doing that, but I'll tell you this. The criminal element brutalizes the cops way a lot more. They have to fight for their life and get these people in handcuffs sometimes. And we sit back. We should be thankful for the fact we have that thin blue line protecting us. And we should be thankful for our military protecting us from Islamic jihadists and so forth. But instead, we find it trendy. We find it fashionable, and it's the cool way to be, to bash them, and in doing so, give the criminal element the signal that hey, it's fair game. You know, it's open season on police officers. Everybody thinks they are bad anyway, right? Well, not so much. No, we don't, and we have to stop this cancer that is eating away at law and order. God is a God of order. He is not a God of chaos or confusion. He's not given us a spirit of fear. And we are not to be afraid, but we are to stand up and support and get behind those who actually have to physically deal with the criminal element on a daily and nightly basis. That's our role as citizens. That's our role. And thank God for this guy in Oklahoma City who had a gun, who came up and stopped the beating of this officer because, let's face it, in some communities, Boston maybe, not very many people have guns. A lot of people have, you know, found themselves living behind the blue curtain, I call it, you know, the blue states where guns aren't allowed or the license is very hard to get or they're so overregulated and so forth that hardly anybody has a firearm. Well, let me say, here in Oklahoma, we believe in the Second Amendment, and we believe, you know, in being the answer and the epitome of what was feared by the Japanese, that if they invaded the mainland, there's a rifle behind every blade of grass. Well, in Oklahoma, that could be true. There might be a rifle behind every blade of grass, and we want that to remain as a deterrent to anyone, any criminal element or any foreign enemy, or any domestic enemy for that matter, who would consider coming into our state and trying to, you know, exert control or tyrannize our people here. Now, Boston, you as the epicenter of the Revolutionary War, you as the original heartland of America, that's what Boston was, the original heartland of America. I think it's time to start acting like the heartland again. I think it's time to shake yourself. I think it's time to open your Bible once again and just begin to read. I preach from the story of Deborah in Judges chapters 4 and chapter 5 last Sunday, because being Mother's Day, it says of Deborah that she arose as a mother in Israel. And you know that Deborah, she understood that it wasn't really her role to be a general in the army, but she went to the general. And she said, I know what God has told you to do. And you know what God has told you to do, right? He told you to go down to the river, and that if you took 10,000 soldiers down to the river, that God would bring the enemy down there to you and deliver the enemy into your hands. The enemy at that time was Sisera, the general, the bloodthirsty general of the Amalekites. And so Barak was the guy's name. He said, "You're right, Deborah. You know, that is what God's told me to do. And obviously, because you know the word of the Lord, I have to say, you must be a spiritual person. You must." It kind of sets me back because I can't deny what you're saying. It is what God told me to do. And so he said, "I'll go if you go with me." And Deborah quickly said, "Yes, I'll go." Sad to say, for the state of male leadership, he had to hold Deborah's hand and have Deborah go along. But at least he went. And you know what? God did what God promised he would do. He delivered the enemy into their hands, because all it took was a torrential rainstorm. Sisera had 800 chariots of iron. He had the advantage militarily on the Israelites. And yet, in a rainstorm, down by the river, when the water comes rushing off the mountains, guess what? All those chariots of iron got stuck in the mud. And Sisera himself had to flee as the Israelites were winning the battle. And the chariots and the horses of Sisera's army were at a disadvantage now in the mud and the rain. He went running for his own life. And you know the story. He ran into a small village. A woman named Jael said, "Turn in here. I'll keep you safe. I'll hide you." So the general ran into her tent, and she gave him some nice warm milk to drink. He fell asleep. And as you know, she drove a tent peg through his temples into the ground and killed the general right there in her tent. Now, the moral of the story is this. We need more Deborahs. We need mothers in Israel to stand up. We need more JLs. We have, many of our women here. I'll be honest with you. On any given day, if you tried to pull some shenanigans in the people that I run around with, I'd be more worried about the females in our group pulling guns out of their purses and filling someone full of holes, you know, because our women are packing here in Oklahoma and they know how to use their pistols. Now, folks, where have we come in America where we've demonized inanimate objects like a gun and said that, like a pagan says, that rocks have souls and rocks are alive when they're not? We say that a gun is alive. It's not. It's who has a hold of the gun. Is it a good guy or a bad guy? What stops a bad guy with a gun, Garland, Texas, is a good guy with a gun. That's the truth. Now, today we haven't had a chance to get on to some other topics. I wanted to give you some highlights on the presidential race, on Islam, on Baltimore a little bit, and the war on cops. But today, that's all the time we have on the Heartland Nation program. I hope that you will take your Christianity, take the scriptures, and don't just make them, you know, a religious thing that you think about once a week on Sunday, but you'll take the scriptures, apply them to everyday life and to all these issues that are in the news that Americans face today. And may we be salt and light, and may we take America back and reclaim this beautiful place called America for Christ. This is Bruce DeLay. Thanks for listening to the Heartland Nation. God bless you, and we'll see you next Tuesday night, right here on WROL 950, The Spirit of Boston.
Now there's kids that can't pray in school, $100 tanks of gas. I can tell you right now, this country ain't supposed to be like that.
This is Bruce DeLay with the Heartland Nation program. I want to thank you for listening here on WROL. I also want to ask you to shoot me an email, heartlandnationhq@gmail.com. That's my email address, heartlandnationhq@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Also, if you'd like to hear podcasts from our former shows here on Heartland Nation, and also some of the audio from our Sunday sermons at Heartland Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you can go to Facebook and just type in Heartland Nation. Search for us on Facebook, Heartland Nation, and there we have a link to all of our podcasts right there at your fingertip. Thanks for listening, and God bless.
You're listening to the Reclaiming America for Christ radio network on WROL AM 950. At 9 o'clock is the latest news and prophecy with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and Prophecy Today. At 9:15 is Science, Scripture, and Salvation with Dr. Henry Morris. And at 9:30 is the John Ankerberg Show.